supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices from the Family. Mahatma Gandhi said poverty is the worst form of violence. On today's show, we're going to put a face and a voice to the many people living in poverty here in the Delaware Valley. It's not just the inner city. It's a problem that extends to the suburbs, even rural communities. Joining me today are two people working to bring dignity, compassion, and resolution to some of these problems these individuals and families face. Dr. Lawrence Real is the chief medical officer at the Department of Behavioral Health right here in Philadelphia. He joins me here in the studio. Larry, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.
Sister Mary Scullion is the executive director of Project Home here in Philadelphia. Sister Mary, welcome. Do we have you?
Great to be here.
Thank you. Well, you know, when I say goodbye at the end of the show, you will hear a name called Trin Thatch, and we thank her because she is our intern. Well, I'm going to introduce her now. She's joining me here in the studio, and what we discovered just this morning is that she's got her personal story about living in poverty. Trin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Dan.
Well, I'm not going to overwhelm you with statistics, but in this country alone, almost 15% of the population experienced living in poverty. Children under the age of 18 were especially vulnerable. Just below one quarter of the their population was living in poverty. Here's the voice of one of them from the Place Called Home Audio Mural Project. Let's listen.
How would I describe it? I would describe a home where there is no food. It was at one point, you know, we actually lived in an abandoned house. There was no electricity, no water, not even to take a shower with. And it was most times that we would have to sleep in a car. But we always found a way to, you know, get us in a motel. But, you know, my mother, you know, she would cry and stuff like that because her, my stepfather would have to sleep in a car. My brother would have to sleep in a car. My sister would have to sleep in a car, this, that, and the other. So, you know, I come from a, you know, a home where as though we try our best, but, you know, it's not, you know, no matter how hard we try, where, you know, it would just always get worse and worse.
Powerful story, and one that can be repeated how many thousands of times. Sister Mary, what were your thoughts and emotions as you listened to that cut?
It's a way too familiar story for so many children that live in Philadelphia and beyond. Today, more than ever, children are living not only in poverty, but in deep poverty, which, as you know, you used the quote from Gandhi earlier, that's how we see it, that poverty is institutionalized violence, because the frustration and the pressure that comes with kids and families living on poverty just is unbearable, as I was described by this young man.
Larry, we just passed the 50th anniversary of the State of the Union address, where Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty. So many social benefits were expanded, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps. Larry, is the war on poverty kind of like the war on drugs, a great idea but just didn't work? Or are there success stories?
Well, I think there are success stories. God knows where we would be without those social entitlements. But I think the young man's comments further illustrate that it's not just poverty, It's the circular things that go along with poverty. It's housing instability. It's not knowing where your next meal's coming from. It's living in neighborhoods where there's more crime. It's having not having the wherewithal to finish your education. All of those things that perpetuate poverty. And I think we gained a lot of ground, though the concern is in the last couple of decades, maybe we're losing ground and income disparities are widening. Mm. So it's a bigger problem than ever.
Trinh, your family came from Vietnam.
Yes.
You were how old?
1.5.
Yeah, so you're not going to remember the trip much.
No.
Do you know where your family settled when they first came here? Did they have resources when they arrived?
So when my family immigrated to the United States, we came over as refugees, and they placed us in Philadelphia. So I grew up here my entire life, and we haven't moved out here since.
Who placed you?
There was... Well, from what my dad told me, since I didn't know much as a baby, we did have, I think, two options, whether, I think it was Philadelphia or Colorado, to move to.
So you were placed here in Philadelphia. I'm guessing now your family didn't come over here with a lot of money.
No.
Any money, do you know?
Barely anything, especially because the conversion of Vietnamese money into American dollars is not that great, so they just saved up whatever they had.
So you're placed here in Philadelphia, and you had told me earlier in North Philly, in the Alney section.
Yes.
Which is a high crime area and pretty dangerous area where the rate of poverty is sky high.
Yes.
What was it like living in Alney?
Living in Alney, I think because growing up, I didn't have other places to grow up to. Everything was the norm. There was a lot of poverty going about. And just for me, it was always home and school. Those were the two places. So I realized it wasn't like, a place that had a lot of resources. School didn't have a lot of resources, but I worked with what I had.
Did you feel safe at home?
I felt really safe inside my house because of the environment that my parents created, but not outside at all.
You felt unsafe?
Yes.
Tell me about food.
My parents always made sure there was food on the table, no matter what they had to sacrifice, and I didn't know much about what they had to sacrifice growing up because I was so young, but I never was hungry a day in my life because of them.
They're not living anymore in Alney.
No.
And neither are you. You just graduated Penn.
Yes.
How did you get from Alney with no money to being a Penn graduate? What do you think contributes to that?
I owe everything that I was able to accomplish being at Penn to my family that consists of my parents and my two siblings. And they've always been a very great base of support for me and, was always there for any help that I ever needed.
So what we're hearing, thank you for that.
Thank you. Trinh.
So what we're hearing is a critical factor, and I'm going to turn to you, Larry. Critical factor here is living in poverty, but parental support, having inside the home that's safe.
Yes, parental support is critical. And I think Trinh's story also illustrates something we should never ignore and that Sister Mary has seen thousands of times, and that is the resilience of human beings and particularly resilience when there are supportive families. Many people grow up in poverty and do very well and achieve the American dream. The problem is the whole population of people, the millions of people who are living in poverty, don't all have such successful stories.
You know, Sister Mary, I've spoken to an awful lot of people who have experienced great adversity, like poverty, and they're doing well. And every one of them says this to me, that there was someone there for me when I needed it. There was a hand. And it, when I needed it. Is that your experience, too?
It is, Dr. Dan. I really believe in what Martin Luther King says when he says, What affects one of us directly affects all of us indirectly. So the reverse of that is true. What we can do for one another really does make an impact on lives. But I would also say that there's a couple things that are at play here. One, obviously, is the personal experience, our family, our friends, those folks that give us a hand up. But it's also the systemic problems that contribute to poverty, and whether we have the opportunity to get out of poverty or not, and that is things like our educational system. It's things like whether you grew up in a one-parent family or a two-parent family, what your chances are. It's things like your access to health care or how healthy your parents or your immediate community is. All those things kind of impact us, or in a neighborhood where there's violence. And if you are traumatized by that violence in a more personal way. So, you know, it's not just, you know, the personal things that happen to any one of us or how lucky we are, whether it's our parents or our friends or our siblings, but it's also the social determinants that impact the opportunities and our opportunity for success or not.
So that raises a question. So if all of these things are strikes against us, Larry, I'm going to turn to you. Do we have a chance?
Yeah, we have a chance, though, I mean, not to be on the negative side, there's Sister Mary is referring to what the World Health Organization has been talking about and the initiative about the social determinants of health and mental health throughout the world. In this country, people talk about adverse childhood experiences or the ACEs. And in fact, a study was done in Philadelphia. The original was done out west back in the late 90s. And what we know is that people experience adverse childhood experiences. Could be emotional abuse or neglect, physical abuse or neglect, sexual abuse, someone who uses substances or is mentally ill in the household, the witnessing of domestic violence. The more of these things that occur to you during childhood, the greater the chances down the road there's going to be consequences to your mental and to your physical health. So we need to intervene, and that's what people are trying to do. The Health Federation of Philadelphia are the ones who sponsored the Philadelphia Urban ACEs study. So they have initiatives going on through health centers, through pediatric offices, working with people on parenting, working with people about food banks to try and address these adverse, to minimize the occurrence of these adverse events.
Sister Mary, I'd like to hear you comment on that. What can be done?
Well,
and what are you doing?
Well, let me just say, so much can be done, and I think that Trin's example of her life and her circumstances is like a testament to hope. I think that what we've seen here at Project Home, many men and women and children that were homeless for many, many years with the right opportunities are able to break the cycle of homelessness and poverty and, you know, integrate fully back into our society and to become successful members of society. In fact, when I heard that someone from the University of Pennsylvania was going to be, you just graduated from Penn, was going to be on the show today, I thought maybe it was one of our students because, again, this is Trin's story is many people's stories that with the right opportunities, people can soar and, you know, be our future leaders. So the question, though, is do we just want, like, individual examples like the ones we just heard, or do we want more like strategic examples where it's not a couple kids or 10% of Penn's population, but it's a much greater percentage. And in order to get the kind of scale that we need in our country so that we really lift not just a couple people or several people out of poverty, but entire generations out of poverty, we need to focus on the building of community throughout economic strata, but we also need to develop sound public policy that furthers the educational and the health, the mental health, the physical health of all our kids.
Let me ask you about one pronoun you've used a few times, and so has Larry. We.
Right.
Who is we?
We is everybody. Again, talent and potential is equally distributed, but opportunity is not always equally distributed. And the people that live on our streets could be our future doctors, radio personalities, presidents, but for that opportunity or opportunities. And that's what we have to focus on more, about creating equal opportunity for all of us, because it's we the people, it's not them and us.
All right, you just used my job description in vain. You talked about radio personality. So you're throwing me in with the we. What can I do? Dan Gottlieb, radio person. What can I do? What can Larry do? What can Trin do? What can my producer do?
Well, I mean, we can all, like, so what, and what you're already doing, I'm preaching to the choir here on this show, but get involved in our civic life. Challenge, look at the problems, try to develop solutions. Get out of our boxes, not just talk to the people that we know, but go to where the issues are. Try and figure out what some of these problems are, whether it's that we have kids in public schools, get more involved in public education.
What does that mean, get involved? Tell me what to do tomorrow. I got a day off tomorrow.
Well, number one, tomorrow, vote. Okay, here you go. Tomorrow, get out there and vote. Be an active citizen. Join your home and school associations. Use your talent for the common good and not just for personal benefit.
What would you have me do when I see a person living on the street?
First thing is to look them in the eye.
Yeah.
Treat people as human beings, as equal, citizens. Don't preclude or judge based on what you see. If I had a nickel for every time a person who's homeless told me, when you see me on the street or in the subway and the way I look and the way I am, and now you see me now, which, after people come into housing and, begin the healing process on the journey home, you're looking at two different people, but you're really looking at the same person. So when you see someone that's homeless, look them in the eye, treat them as a human being. And sometimes it's just that human contact that gives people the confidence to get up and to come in and to do something positive for themselves. But
go on. Go on.
I'm going to stop there, because let Larry and yourself and Trin, other people probably have better ideas. But
yeah. We're going to get to more ideas after our break. But Larry, did you want to?
Well, it's not my bailiwick, but clearly some of this is political. I mean, unless we rise up as a society and declare that things like health insurance coverage is a right and not a privilege, that housing is a right, that the right to a proper education is protected, then we're still going to struggle with these matters.
When I was preparing this show, I was reminded of the keynote speech then State Senator Obama gave at the Democratic National Conference. It had to be in the 90s almost. I don't quite recall. But he talked about a child in Chicago who couldn't read. He said, that's not somebody else's child. That's my child. And he went on with examples. That's my child. And the person living in the street, that is my brother, father. When we can shift gears, and as Sister Mary said, look into the eyes of that person, you'll find that there's a human behind those eyes, behind those disheveled clothes. Trent, I want to ask you one last question before we have to take a break. Many years ago, I interviewed a very successful lawyer who grew up in poverty. And she said she noticed when she was pouring Kool-Aid for her kids and their friends, she was very careful to make sure each one got the same amount and that there would be some left over. Now, she carried it with her. You know, it was somewhere inside of her. So tell me about Alni, your childhood. Is there part of it that's still inside of you?
There's always a part of Alni that will be inside of me, and I am more than proud than ever to say that's where I came from. I've never been ashamed of my background, and I carry that throughout my time at Penn to make sure that everyone knew that I was from Philadelphia, and I'm here just as everyone else is.
Where are you going from here? You graduated Penn. What now?
That's a good question, Dr. Dan. I would say wherever life takes me. I'm not too sure, but I'm really hopeful that I will be happy wherever I'm going.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, for telling your story.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for all your help on the show. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to hear more voices and, quote, see more faces of poverty. We'll continue our discussion with Sister Mary and Dr. Larry Reel. By the way, our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's here on WHYY FM.
Supporting WHYY, Yampolsky Law PC, a law firm based in Tree Rose, Pennsylvania, focused on transforming conflict through mindful practices of collaborative law, mediation, family law, and labor and employment law. More information at conflicttransformed.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Erica Stone of the Wistar Institute, proud supporter of WHYY. I was recently recruited to the Wistar Institute as a new faculty member and was excited to join Wistar due to its collaborative culture. As an immunologist, I work alongside cancer researchers to discover new ways to harness the power of the immune system to treat cancer. Find out more at wistar.org. My name is Dr. Erica Stone, and I am Wistar Science.
Support for WHYY comes from Bethany Christian Services, presenting an informational meeting to learn about international adoptions on November 5th in Philadelphia. Further information on the events tab at bethany.org/philadelphia or at 717-431-7869.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about the face, the voice, the experience of living in poverty, homelessness, or, as Sister Mary explained, extreme poverty. Where Sister Mary Scullion is the executive director of Project Home. Dr. Lawrence Reel is the chief medical officer in the Department of Behavioral Health right here in Philadelphia. And our number is 888-477-9499. Sister Mary, there's poverty, and then there's homelessness. Tell us what Project Home has identified as the critical issues here.
Well, the critical issue is poverty. What do all homeless people have in common? It's that they're very, very poor. What makes one person that's poor go into poverty rather than someone else? And that could be several factors. If you're very poor and you have a mental health issue or an addiction or you lose a job, that could rapidly put you right on the street. But mental illness and addiction are equal opportunity diseases, as we all well know from our family, our friends, our coworkers. It touches every segment of society. But if you happen to be very, very poor, it could be enough to put you out on the street. And again, many people experience poverty throughout their lifetime, but extreme poverty is something that is much more devastating than just being poor, as difficult as it is to be poor. When you're extremely poor, it's more of a chronic condition day in and day out. And it really has a traumatizing effect on children. And Dr. Real might want to speak to this more clearly, but kids of very, very poor families are often much more likely to be depressed, to have physical and mental problems, to have addiction issues later on in life. So extreme poverty has not only consequences for today, but it also can have consequences for the future.
Larry.
Yeah, I mean, many people believe that severe poverty is the single most potent determining factor, social determinant, of mental health problems. But the poverty and, the associated things like food insecurity do lead, and the statistics are consistent throughout a variety of studies in many states, that these folks are going to have increased incidences of cancer, diabetes, asthma, mental illness, substance use disorders, suicide attempts, and so forth.
I read a book many, many years ago by Jonathan Kozol, and he went to Harlem and studied poverty in Harlem back then. And he found that, you know, the air quality is worse in Harlem than it is down in Lower Manhattan, even the air quality. So I'm wondering, and I'm thinking specifically about kids, what about their brain development? What happens to their brains?
Well, that's why in this movement, the World Health Organization is saying that all policy, everything needs to be directed at what is its impact on the health of the population. And that the single most important thing we can do is to focus on children, before they're born and in early childhood development, because that's when we can have the most impact. And if you look at the world, the air is lousy in Harlem. There are also places in the world where kids live and, you know, they're going to get diseases if they drink the water.
Larry, out of everything I read, all the statistics I read these past couple of weeks, the most disturbing by far was when I learned that across America, our country, 38% of black children and 32% of Hispanic children are living in poverty. That's unfathomable. Almost 40% of the population. And when I read those, and the reason I'm directing this to a psychiatrist here, when I read those statistics, I felt angry, I felt shame, I felt sad, and I felt helpless. And it's that last one that I want to talk about, feelings of helplessness. And I fear, or assume even, that those feelings of helplessness are those emotions that prevent people from getting involved.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if you do not have the hope that things can get better, then you will succumb to despair.
Well, it's not even not having the hope, and I'll direct this to you, Sister Mary. It's not envisioning what kind of impact could I have. You know, send a check for $50 or $5 or $500. What impact is that going to have? That's what I mean about feeling helpless, impotent.
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, that could help, and it's something. But I think, you know, equally, if not more important, is getting involved with people that are experiencing poverty by either volunteering, you know, at a school or a nonprofit organization, and putting what you're trying to do today, Dr. Dan, putting a face on people who are experiencing poverty, because I think the way that we're all touched and changed is when we allow the pain and suffering of another to impact us. It's that can change. I know it has for me, changed me for life. Like, I can never be the same once I've seen and met and know so many people that are living on the margins of our society. It not only, reaching out to those in need, not only changes their lives, but it also will change all of our lives, because we'll learn to live a little differently and be a little differently, because we really do need one another, and we need to be part of that larger community. I think it's when we isolate ourselves, whether it's being isolated in poor communities or isolated in more protected communities, that we all lose. We need to mix it up a little bit, and we really do need each other to be actively engaged in making our world and our communities better places to live. I think it was Martin Luther King who said, freedom isn't free. You know, you just can't kick back and think, okay, I've made it, this is, you know, fine. We all have to find ways of making our world better places, our communities better places. And it really doesn't matter what that is or how that looks like. Each one of us has our own calling and vocation and sense of what we need to do. And we need to pay attention more to that and to all work for that common good that America was founded on. I mean, that's what makes America such an awesome country, is that we believe in the common good, and we have to work for the common good and not let special interests take over or take the, agenda.
Right. Larry?
I was going to say, yeah, not only does those kind of statistics can make you feel helpless, they also are embarrassing and infuriating when you think, as Sister Mary says, this great land of ours, richest country, and what a wonderful history, when you look at where we stand in terms of growing poverty rates, growing income disparities, growing health disparities, and we have the wherewithal to address these things.
I want to address something Sister Mary just said, and that she almost defined compassion. The word compassion, you know, making eye contact. And, you know, I hearken back to what developmental psychologists say all babies need is to, quote, feel felt, to be experienced for who they really are. And, you know, it can happen throughout the trajectory. And, you know, I talk about how after my accident, I felt I was severed from my own humanity. Because everybody acted differently than I did. They could walk around. Their bodies were different. And I felt severed from my species. And the more people talked at me, the more severed I felt. And it was when one person came in my room with tears in his eyes and said, "What's it like?" Those words, "What's it like?" And I would follow up and say, when you look in the eyes of someone, you don't have to say those words, but wonder, what's it like to be you?
I agree. A colleague of mine from California who has done wonderful work with seriously mentally ill and poor people, commenting about all the book knowledge that we have, often says, doesn't matter how smart you are, how good your techniques are, people don't really care what you think until they think that you care. That's the starting point.
Hmm. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we've got a peer counselor from Project Home. His name is Mark, and we're going to hear his story. We're talking about poverty, homelessness, and what we can do for this very human problem that affects all of us and very deeply. My guests are Sister Mary Scullion, she's Executive Director of Project Home, Dr. Lawrence Reels, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Behavioral Health right here in Philadelphia. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
If your child is struggling in school, why wait to make a change? Supporting WHYY Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli, for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty. An information session is Sunday, November 8th from 1 to 3. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Now considering applications for grades 6 through 11.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or online at philafound.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about the face, the humanity of poverty. We've been talking with Sister Mary Scullion, Executive Director of Project Home, Dr. Lawrence Real, and we'll continue speaking with them. But first, on the phone, we've got Mark, who's a peer counselor from Project Home. Mark, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, what's your story? Tell us about your childhood, how you grew up, and what you experienced.
Well, I actually grew up in a pretty middle-class family, two parents, mother and father. You know, they both ran small businesses. But through a series of bad decisions I made, I ended up on the street. I was an only child. I didn't really have too many other people to turn to. You know, pretty small family. So, you know, once I ended up on the streets, behind the alcohol and drug use and like kind of small mental health issues too, but nothing major. But I found myself with nowhere to turn, and you know, I got caught up in the street culture.
What's that mean, street culture?
Well, you know, just like a lot of people who kind of have no hope, and they just, you know, find a way to survive on the streets, and they kind of get, like, used to it, like kind of content with being there.
Hmm. You literally lived on the streets. Where did you sleep?
Yeah. I remember a couple winters that I didn't go indoors through the whole winter.
How do you survive?
You know, I've survived winters by just living on steam grates, you know, in Center City, Philadelphia.
Did you have hope?
Excuse me?
Did you have hope, Mark?
No, not at the time. At the time, I didn't have any hope in... I pretty much didn't care if I live or die. So, I mean, it was pretty bad, actually.
What happened out there? Did you speak with people? Were there other homeless people that you connected with, spoke with, or were you just on your own?
You kind of developed, I don't know, some people develop like a little family structure on the streets. You know, it's people you start to care about. It's people you look up to. You know, it's people you want to take care of. So, I mean, you kind of just get used to it and you make the best out of it.
So, you know, how old were you?
I probably started going on the streets probably in my late 30s,
wow.
Off and on in my late 30s, and probably like in the last maybe 8 years, that's when it got really bad, where I was permanently in the streets, because I'd been in the streets and then connected with my family and went back home. Like, it was a back and forth thing for many years until it just ended up with me being out there permanently.
How do you get out?
Well, actually, the way I got out was, you know, Project Home, they've been around for a while, and, you know, they have the outreach people. They come around, and it's a lot of dedicated people with Project Home. they would come around and they would, you know, bring people things they needed, blankets, food, and just talk to you, make you feel like you were human again. I mean, that's one of the biggest things, you know, that I heard people say before about being on the streets and feeling like you're invisible, you know, like you just don't exist because, you know, people see you suffering. People can see you, you know, five below zero and you're bundled up on a steam grate, and people can just walk right past that like, you know, everything's fine. But some of the people at Project Homewell, all of the people there are dedicated, but some of them used to come around, they're outreach people, and, you know, like I said, they would talk to you and make you feel human again.
Was there a point where you looked forward to seeing them?
Well, to tell you the truth, just a funny story. I used to be underground in the subway tunnels, and Sister Mary used to come out with outreach. And I actually couldn't wait till they left, you know, because I respected them, and I didn't want to drink in front of them. So I used to be in there sometime, and they would come in, and they would be talking to everybody, and I would be sitting there like, oh, I wish these people would leave, you know. But, you know, she has a way of, like, tearing down walls that people have. And she talked to me a few times, and, you know, I don't know if it, you know, if it was just her sincerity or whatever, but she made me really feel like she cared. And, and after talking to them a couple of times, I decided to trust them, because you kind of lose a lot of trust for people when you're in the situation I was in.
Yeah. So take us from Sister Mary in the subway with you to you're becoming a peer counselor at Project Home. What do you do there?
Well, okay. The first thing that happened to me was I went to a residence they have called St. Elizabeth's, and I had been in treatment places before, and I've been in shelters before, and this place, there was nothing like it I've ever been, exposed to in the city. I mean, you know, the people there, instead of, like, really telling you what you should do and what you would have to do, they kind of, like, supported you in what you thought you wanted to do or what you thought you needed. And between the employment specialist they have there, which is a lady that I have to mention, her name is Alexis. She was amazing because, you know, I had lost hope of what I could actually do and that I could actually be human again. And, you know, she just encouraged me until I got to the point where, you know, I could do an internship, which they have internship programs where they prepare people to go out and actually work again. You know, you can be an intern for Project Home, and they'll, like, support you, you know, little baby steps, you know, to get you back integrated with society. And I went through all of that. They have a lot of dedicated counselors that, you know, helped me with my addiction problems. And, you know, they got education opportunities. They have, you know, schooling for people to help people get their GEDs and just to make their life better.
So, Mark, this is what you got. Now I want to hear what you give. What's a peer program?
I tried to be an example for, you know, other guys, other men that come into the program and they get connected with Project Home. I try to go out and work with the outreach team whenever I can, because I still have a ton of friends and people that I care about that are still out there in a situation struggling. And, you know, I try to show them that it's a way out. Anytime anyone, you know, cares to hear my story or, you know, hear my strengths and my hope, you know, I don't mind telling them at all. Like, I'm not embarrassed about, you know, the life I had. Sometimes I think, you know, God might have let me go through the things that I went through so I could help someone else out of it. So, I mean, it's just amazing what could happen if you have the right people behind you. And a lot of times people have the tendency of, you know, to see someone on the street, or someone's homeless, or someone with mental health issues, or just someone struggling, period. and you know, they just make a snap judgment automatically.
I want
and they have
go
ahead,
on.
I'm sorry.
I want to
and they okay.
I want to underline something you said just a minute ago, that it's amazing what can happen when you have people behind you.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important. It's amazing what can happen. And, you know, you said something else earlier on also. You said something happened at Project Home that made you feel human again. And what happens with all of us, and I'll turn to you, Larry, about this, is when we are seen as non-human, we begin to experience ourselves as non-human.
Yeah, and the converse is true. And I think what Mark's story also illustrates, and you see this over and over, and this is one of the signs of hope in the system, that at an individual and organizational level, the power of giving back for people who have recovered from being the depths that they sometimes hold is incredible. You see it in a variety of ways. The athletes who came from an impoverished area and they go back and they, you know, refurbish a gym. And you see it in trends saying, I'm proud that I'm part of ONLY. But in particular, with programs like Project Home and with certified peer specialists throughout Philadelphia's behavioral health system, the igniting of the altruism that everybody has inside of them is incredibly powerful.
Sister Mary?
Yes.
So tell me about some of the other projects at Project Home. We've heard about outreach. What do you have for children and adolescents?
Well, there's a program called the Honickman Learning Center Comcast Technology Labs, which is a state-of-the-art technology center in the heart of North Central Philadelphia that children come to from different schools, and they learn technology skills and improve their reading and some of their academics after school. And then there's a college access program. So today we have 49 students in college, and actually one graduated who lived on her sister's couch. You know, when she was in high school, her parents had both died, and she lived on her sister's couch and was virtually homeless. And she went to the University of Indiana, Pennsylvania, graduated from there, and went to the University of Pennsylvania and just got her master's degree in social work. That is, like, amazing. And so to see the talent, again, to see the talent in Mark, I mean, Mark is an incredibly talented person and a leader and are smart and hardworking and maybe hardworking to a fault. I'm just laughing a little bit because Mark and I have talked about that. I mean, he's such a hard worker and so intelligent. And to have that lost on our streets, or to have this young woman who just graduated with a master's degree from the University of Pennsylvania maybe lost to the streets, that's one person, and there can be two different stories. And we as a society have to, again, continue to work as hard as we can to continue to provide opportunities for those that are left behind in some way, because it's not just that people are losing, the people that are homeless or the people living in deep poverty, the children. It's that we as a society are losing. These are our future, again, leaders. These are the talent, the brain, the potential that is yet to be realized is a loss to us as a community. And so it's really a two-way street. It's not just a one-way street. And that's, I think, what is the hope and the potential is what's so exciting to be a part of, to seeing Mark and his story and his life unfold, and to see the ways that he's touching other people that are coming off the streets and into recovery. So it's not just like, you know, one thing positive that happens for Mark, it's the exponential effect that happens with this peer support, the city's, the behavioral, you know, Department of Behavioral Health, their peer support program. It's the exponential effect of what this young woman's going to do as a social worker. So, you know, it's so hopeful this work.
Yeah, it sure is. Before I turn to Larry, I just want to pick up on one thing you said much earlier about Mark. You said he's a hard worker, sometimes to a fault. I'm just curious, might that be true for a Sister Mary Scullion?
No, I didn't. But we all strive. Mark and I both strive for balance in our life. You know, you need that balance, and that's always a little bit of a challenge, I guess, for many of us.
Larry, I want to just observe that Mark and so many others are devoted to their work because they experience gratitude, and those who experience gratitude tend to be more generous of spirit than those who don't. And that's just my experience. And those who don't experience gratitude generally aren't aware of what there is to be grateful for.
That's true. I guess that the power of giving back, the power of paying it forward is remarkable. But if you have nothing to give back, that's distressing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly why I've chosen the Monday before Thanksgiving to be the final weekly show of Voices in the Family before we go on to do specials, because there is just so much gratitude for all of us to experience. And the question when we experience this kind of gratitude is, what do I owe for these gifts? How can I return these gifts? And it really is a lot about gratitude.
Yes.
Sister Mary, is that your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gratitude is a tremendous grace and a very empowering and humble reality that we all know that none of us can do it on our own. We all really do need each other. And we have something to contribute.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for all the good work you're doing. And I also want to thank you, Mark. And I also want to thank Trin Thatch for her contributions. Well, we're going to keep the conversation going. Next week is about recovery and anonymity. And you can follow us at voices@whyy.org. Well, the engineer for today has been Kevin Griffin. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Like I said, Trin's our intern. Larry Roebling produces Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Please enjoy your week, my friends.